Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Ascension Secrets of Saint Germain. I'm Troika Saint Germain, and I have a fabulous guest this evening. First of all, I want to say hi again to everyone. I've been gone for 2 weeks, but I'm back, and my friend is here joining us. Her name is Aluna Joy Yashkin. I'm sorry, Aluna. Yashkin. You should see it spelled out. It's really
it's a hard one.
It's hard. And Aluna and I have known each other for 15 years. I met her when I first moved to Mount Shasta, where she was living here at the time. And now she lives in Sedona, Arizona. And she's a multi-talented, multifaceted, fabulous goddess. And she is an alternative historian, meaning she knows the real way it happened, on the Mayan and Inca traditions. And she does spiritual tours to the sacred sites connected with those modalities, and has been doing so since 1995. She's written two books. One's Mayan Astrology, and the other is the Mayan Daykeeper. She creates sacred site essences that she makes right there at the sacred sites, and she's also the conduit for the angelic energies to come through to create the I Am Blessing Water essences, and they're based on the I Am Presence and the I Am Teachings, which of course we all know Saint Germain's very involved in that. So Aluna's an oracle, a mystic, and she also does private sessions for people with the Star Elders. And she's got a free newsletter that's very informative, which you can sign up for her on her website, which is alunajoy.com. And without further ado, I would like to introduce everyone to Aluna Joy. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good. How's the weather in Mount Shasta?
Well, it rained it just poured yesterday, and so the mountain now is all beautifully white.
Oh, I miss the mountain, but I don't miss the weather.
It gets a little nippy in Sedona, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, not like here.
Long underwear and snow boots are a distant memory.
Yes, well, it's time for me to start digging out the winter clothes deeply buried. So you just got back from Peru, right?
Yeah.
Before I ask you about that trip, I know you're going to be speaking about the Star Elders during this because you're very deeply connected with them. Could you explain to our listeners who are the Star Elders?
Well, the Star Elders are my guides. I've been connected with them since I was 2 or 3 years old. Pretty much my first memory as a child.
Uh-huh.
Realizing I was connected to them, and I was quite shocked to find out my genetic family was not my family. And these guides were. Making life very interesting after that.
Uh-huh.
They're Star Walkers, or beings that know how to traverse the skies through time and space. The shamanic realms would call them Starwalkers. They work to help synchronize galaxies. That's their big job. Their latest project is Earth, of course, because as we all know, just by turning on the news or looking out our front door, the world is a little bit out of sync. Just a touch. And they were the ones that anchored a lot of the ancient technologies of the ancient wisdom in sacred sites, like in Peru and in the Maya lands. They were in Egypt, they were in Atlantis and Lemuria and South America, all those places. And they touched base with the Earth on several occasions during history, ancient history. And mapped the way Earth was. Even the Mayas today in Guatemala understand about the Star Elders. They call them the Invisible Council.
The Invisible Council.
The Invisible Council. And on 8 Bots days, they still go into their ceremonies and commune with the Invisible Council.
Mm-hmm.
And this council is the ones that actually put the cycles of time, or the calendars, the Mayan calendars, into the awareness of people of Earth.
Ah, okay.
So the Mayas in Guatemala still talk about this and know about this. It's not something the Mayas created. It's something that the Invisible Council or the people from the stars created. So and the last of them left about 800 years ago in a site called Quiriqua, or Quiriqua.
Okay, well, they sound... How are they different from what a lot of people would refer to as ETs?
Well, they're more like ascended masters.
Okay.
When I feel their energy, they feel like Viking angels. They're very beautiful and angelic looking, but at the same time, they have a really strong, kind of blunt and fearless energy about them.
Uh huh.
They're very aware of the Great White Brotherhood and the Brotherhood of the Seven Rays, which is the South American version of the Great White Brotherhood.
Okay.
So they know, all these guys know each other.
Right.
you know, there's not much limitation
when
go into the next, go to the next level.
Uh-huh.
But they all know each other. But their difference between them and Ascended Masters is their first purpose had nothing to do with actual humanity. It had to do with synchronizing the cycles of time between Earth and other forms in the universe.
Like setting the gears of the universe.
Yeah, kind of like the gears of a watch.
Okay.
And if one gear's out of sync, then the clock doesn't...
Everything else,
Yeah, and so the Earth has been out of sync, and over ancient history, the Earth's cycles have shifted because of meteor hits or other things, and they've been trying to adjust that to the point where we're about, from my really bad mathematical estimation, we're about 60 seconds off a day.
Okay.
And that's all it takes. And once we get in sync with the rest of the universe, which is the basic central clock of the universe, which is the cycles that they anchored in the Maya lands when they brought that technology to Earth, when we sync up with that, then... everything kind of clicks into place. And all those things inside of yourself that you know you should be able to do but you can't because it all kind of clicks in. Telepathy, traveling with your thought and mind, really being totally your master of your reality.
So the clicking into and resyncing into time or the gears sounds like that would definitely help with the ascension process.
Yeah, I think it's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the ascension process, there's a lot of angles on it. One of them is we need to do our work.
Mm-hmm.
We need to become self-aware and master ourselves.
Right.
Which is a lot of what the I Am teachings teach.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, it goes into all that about mastering your consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need to be in control. Because once you become aware and able to use the creative force of the universe, you don't want to have a bad thought in there.
That's for sure.
Because, you know, it just wouldn't turn out so good for you.
there are days and moments when I say to myself, boy, it's sure a good thing that I don't have a total instant manifestation.
Yeah. And we could all say that right now, but we're still working on learning, and especially with the movie The Secret that's come out, it's made creating our reality such a mainstream phenomenon and a mainstream... Put it into the mainstream culture.
The mainstream, right.
Yeah, it's just taken off to the point where the more we go into agreement with that, the more real it becomes. And as the Earth becomes in sync with everything else, and part of that has to do with our consciousness, the more we become aware and conscious of ourselves, the more we help the Earth become into alignment. And then once we come into alignment, then watch out.
Yeah. Great. So this sounds like a good time to ask what happened on your last trip to Machu Picchu and Peru. Did you have a fabulous time as you usually do and all kinds of great messages and insight?
It's pretty hard to have a bad time in Peru. Other than the fact that you're sucking oxygen all day. You know, working to catch your breath.
Uh-huh.
Because of the altitude, the energy there is... that and Palenque are probably my two favorite places, the Sacred Valley and up by Machu Picchu and those areas, and Palenque, Mexico, are probably the two places I would really consider heart sites. They activate the heart, they open the heart, they help you hear your heart, help you evolve your heart. It's a very emotional heart place, Peru, especially once you get out of Lima and you get up into Cusco, because no one likes Lima.
Uh-huh.
And once you get up into the highlands, and you, the veils are so thin between you and the Brother to the Seven Rays, which is the South American version of the Great White Brotherhood.
Right.
The veils are so thin, and it's so impacting on you that there really is not a good way to describe what you get there, except for some of the messages that might come through.
Uh-huh.
Machu Picchu is a great teacher because it doesn't give you anything at all, and that doesn't sound like a very good teacher. But it's the one sacred site that leaves such a void in the outer world. It's so empty and so impeccably clear that the only thing left is you.
Right.
And you have to discover yourself when you're there. And usually, you know, we stay 2 or 3 days. Most groups stay a day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not enough for me. I usually, the first day is exploring and taking pictures and going, wow. Then about the second or third day, that's when you hit that wall where you definitely break yourself open and become more aware of the places you're holding yourself back and getting clear about what your next step is. And it's different for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But it was my 13th trip with a group, and I think group leaders should be immune to getting their challenges. But
oh yeah, sure. Like you should get a free ride. Uh-huh.
I know it should be an easy coast by now. But no, I get my issues and my challenges too.
Mm-hmm.
So second day in, I sat there for 2 hours and sobbed on the side of the hillside and watched my favorite mountain, Apu Putakisi, which I think is the dimensional doorway into the inner city after Lemuria fell. The Lemurians didn't leave the planet like the Mayas did, the Star Elders. They didn't leave the planet. They actually went inside of the interdimensional city in the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to know anything to know this. People driving up the hill, up the switchbacks, and once they get to the top, the first thing they do is they point to that mountain and say, what is that? Because the energy is so prevalent.
Uh-huh.
I don't tell my groups until afterwards, because I watch their reactions first, and they all point, and they all go, what's that mountain? And that's the doorway. And then there's a huge range of mountains, layers of mountains behind that, where the Golden City is. And I just heard from archaeologists, new cities have been discovered, actual physical remains of ruins as big, if not better, than Machu Picchu, back behind those mountains.
Can you physically get to them?
I guess if you're a local, you know, you probably could, but it's a really hard trek for tourists.
Uh-huh.
It's a 2 or 3 days, really, really hard hike.
So do you access the doorway just by projecting your consciousness there? Then?
Yeah, you meditate in front of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's across a canyon with the river below, the one mountain. And you get there's pretty much no bad view from anywhere in Machu Picchu, the site. Because it's not Machu Picchu that has the energy, by the way. It's not the site itself. Although there's some pretty powerful rocks and carvings and special magnetically charged rocks inside the site, it's the three mountains surrounding the city that are the pyramids. And that's Apu Putakisi, the one with the doorway in it.
Uh-huh.
Apu Wainupichu, that's the one that's behind the city that everybody sees in the photograph.
Yeah.
You can actually climb that one. And then Apu Machu Picchu, which is behind, and no one takes a picture of that because it's not that pretty, but it's the tallest of the mountains. And so there's three sacred mountains. There's the Trinity,
yes.
Uh-huh. That, you know, the Trinity of the Christ consciousness, but it's also the three ascension steps for the Inca. So everything's done in threes. And
God, when are you going again? I want to go with you.
There's three ascension steps. The first is get to know yourself,
uh-huh.
Become self-aware, self-remembering, self-knowing. The second is learning how to take control of the energy in your body, kundalini and otherwise, other energies.
Right.
How to master that. And the third is sacred service. And it doesn't. You don't do them all at once or one step at a time. Sometimes you mix them up.
Yeah, they're intertwined.
Yeah, you do some self-remembering as you're doing sacred service while
you're
learning.
And you do it in layers, you know.
Yeah.
Different.
Exactly. So there's temples to three windows. There's three steps carved everywhere. There's three steps carved going nowhere. You know, it goes into a wall. And down to three steps.
Uh-huh. Huh.
And three mountains. It's the Trinity. So it's a pretty fabulous place. After 13 years, I still go and find areas that I hadn't had a chance to explore and sit in. Have my favorite spots in the city, but it never fails to help me awaken to deeper levels inside myself.
Mm-hmm. So what messages did you receive this time?
Well, this year it was the message that we are the mountains. And as I was explaining a bit earlier, the mountains are the energy forces. They're the pyramids there.
Uh-huh.
They're the ones that have the knowledge, the wisdom. They're the masters. They're called Apus, living mountains. They said that they, I think it was equinox, sunrise, morning. At least half the group made it up the hill, and we were doing a ceremony with Star Ripperetti of Star Flower Essences. She was there.
Mm-hmm.
Now we combined groups and did a morning equinox solar wave ceremony. And then I tuned in to see what the Star Elders had to say. And Lord Maru, who's sort of the leader of the Great White Brotherhood
yes.
of South America, he's sort of like St. Germain's equivalent
mm-hmm.
in the South. He took us on this journey into the center of our heart. And there's these canyons. We go back into our heart. And in the way in the back of this canyon, there was a bright light. And that's the seed that we've been all holding on to. And everybody knows about this seed. It's that one little special place inside of you that you know is there, but you can't quite get it out.
Right.
Or it's a place you want to crack open and let the rest of yourself out,
mm-hmm.
but you can't quite do it. It's that. And it's surrounded by mountains. And they said, become the mountains, because the mountains have the power and the wisdom and the clarity to know how to sprout this seed, which looked like a crystal ball of light inside of our hearts. And so they told us to be the mountains. And so the next day, the group dispersed, and some climbed the three different mountains, and some went other places, and I sat in front of Apu Putakisi, and I worked on becoming the mountain. And that's about as far as I got. I'm going to have to go back next year.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. But the mountain is, mountains aren't small, they're big.
Right.
They're huge. And the mountains in Machu Picchu are unbelievably, they're so grand and so vast and so unbelievably beautiful that they almost feel like a movie set. You know what I mean?
Yes.
They don't feel quite real. It's kind of like when you look at the edge of you're standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of the canyon doesn't feel real
mm-hmm.
because it feels like it could be a movie set.
Yeah, or a stage backdrop or something.
Yeah, because it's so vast and so big
mm-hmm.
that you're not large enough to hold it inside of you and get it all the way. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Machu Picchu's the same way.
Sure.
And so the idea is to stretch yourself and become big enough to contain those mountains from one side all the way to the other, all the way around. And be able to contain that and be able to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing I could do was I took out my camera and took consecutive photographs in a circle.
Right.
And stitched them all together so I could see them all at once in a photograph. Which I posted on my website, by the way, at alunajoy.com.
Oh, good.
On the tour page for the Peru trip. So it's stitched. You can see two of the sacred mountains and the sun gate in that picture.
Hmm. Cool. But
trying to hold on, trying to become big enough to hold the massiveness of what is coming and be able to get it.
Mm-hmm.
That was what they meant by being the mountain.
Yeah. What, everyone talks about 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And that's number that year has come from, it actually is in lots of different religions and lots of different cultures, but it's best known as being the end of the Mayan calendar.
Mm-hmm.
You do Mayan astrology mm-hmm. and all, what's your take on the calendar and 2012 and what's going to happen?
Well, let's clear something up right away.
Okay.
It's not the end of the world. And it's not the end of the calendar.
Oh.
Cycles of time never end.
Uh-huh.
They just reboot, what I call reboot, or
right.
start over.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't really start over where they were, where they had begun. They always come back around to its starting point again, but in an evolutionary notch.
In a spiral.
Yeah, it's a spiral, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like what the Maya say, it's like the serpent who never quite catches his tail.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's always evolving.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Mayas, the living Mayas in Guatemala, say the calendar isn't ending. It's just starting another huge cycle.
It's just the restart.
Yeah. Some people think it's a 26,000-year cycle. The Star Elders say that it's a 104,000-year cycle, which is four cycles of 26,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge, huge shift because it changes evolutionary intentions in that shift.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we're changing our consciousness so rapidly. New ideas are being accepted and assimilated very quickly now.
They are. It's amazing,
mm-hmm.
isn't it?
If you think about your grandparents or your great-grandparents,
mm-hmm.
what they've learned in a lifetime, they might have had two or three, four really big lessons in a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
We get that in a week.
Oh, I know.
And the things we have to assimilate and to be aware of, to be a part of participating in the world that we're in right now, is massive.
I know, it's mind-boggling.
It's massive.
I mean, just keeping up with technology is beyond my... I look at certain parts of technology coming up and I go, well, you know, I really don't need that in my life. I'll pass on that one.
2 years later, you find yourself needing it.
Yeah.
Like I could never understand why anybody would need a computer.
Uh-huh.
Or internet, why would you want to do that? And now internet is the way I touch people.
Yes, well,
the
internet to me is a portal to the higher dimensions,
mm.
where time and space don't exist, and there's instant communication and telepathic. I mean, there's so many metaphors that I can and parallels that I can see with the internet, but that's like a whole and complete show.
Mm-hmm.
So, and believe it or not, we're halfway through the show already. I can't believe this is going so fast. So, speaking of going so fast. What about bending light?
Bending light is a message the buddies gave me, the Star Elders.
Mm-hmm.
I call them the buddies because they've been with me since I was
Yeah, I call the Ascended Masters the boys.
The boys. You know, they actually like those kind of terms.
They do. They have a great sense of humor, and they like it when you're confident enough to speak to them that way. I can, you know, and the boys is a term that I got from old Mae West movies, you know. Like Mae West and her boys.
And you know why they like it? Because if you call them Ascended Masters, then you've got them on a pedestal.
Exactly.
And then you can't be the mountain.
Exactly. You can't be an Ascended Master when you've got them on a pedestal.
Yeah.
You can't be their equal.
Yeah, the age of the guru is way over.
Uh-huh.
And we're the ones that are supposed to be walking in the master's shoes now.
Right.
The bending light message came a few months back when we were going through some dimensional doorways in time based on solstices and meteor showers and other interesting stuff that would be too boring to go into here. But what they're talking about is we're going into a frequency or a time in reality where things are running at a higher frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And this is nothing new. We all understand
that. Yeah, we all know, yeah.
Okay, but if you were riding a bicycle, okay, and let's just say you were riding on gravel dirt road.
Mm-hmm.
You know how hard it is to pedal that,
yes.
that bicycle. And then if all of a sudden you come upon a just sheet glass road that's just perfectly smooth, as soon as you hit that road, the first thing that happens is you're able to go quicker, right?
Right.
Because it's an easier road.
Right.
The frequency is higher, or there's less obstacles.
Yes, it's a smooth
road.
Mm-hmm.
So you're on the smooth road. Now, the first thing that happens when you hit that is it bends. When you're like you're pushing a shopping cart and you're on gravel and you go to, or you're on pavement and you go to gravel, the first thing it does when you hit the gravel is it tends to turn one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So when the buddy started talking to me about bending light, I said, well, you've got to give me an example because I don't understand this. Because they said when we hit the new frequency, what happens is we actually bend inside. Our light bends because we're hitting a different frequency. It's a different speed. It's going faster. And the rest of us is going to catch up. And as the rest of us is still behind in the old frequency and part of us is in the new frequency, what happens is we bend. And this goes back to some old South American Great White Brotherhood teachings about the elves or the elders. You know, the letter L is shaped like
this.
It's shaped like
bend.
An L. There's a 90-degree turn in there. And this is why they called them the elders.
Ah.
Because L, because it takes a 90-degree turn with your spirit or your light inside of you, your energy inside of you, to make a dimensional shift.
Mm-hmm.
So they were termed the elders. It had nothing to do with them being old.
I see.
It had to do with them bending their light so they could shift dimensions. Just like the Lemurians, when they went into Crystal City, they had to do the elder thing. They had to bend their light and shift into another dimension. Now, when you shift, unfortunately, our bodies, we're doing this with our bodies. Our spirits get it right away.
Right.
Our spirits get it so fast, it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But our bodies are going, oh, what is this? I don't get this. I don't get this new frequency.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting aches and pains, and people are getting weird headaches.
Well, our bodies were created in the third dimension.
That's
third
right.
Dimensional vehicle. So
they're really
learning. We're expecting our bodies to really learn and transform into.
We're expecting our bodies to evolve as fast as the universe
mm-hmm.
is, and our bodies are very dense material.
Mm-hmm.
And we're supposed to take them with us this time.
Yes.
So it's a real challenge for our bodies. So a lot of things that are showing up is like weird nausea for no apparent reason, dizziness, waking up at like sometimes it's 2 in the morning. Right now it seems to be 4.
Mm-hmm.
4 in the morning for people. Losing their appetite.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a whole list. In fact, there's quite a few articles on my website that explain a whole list
mm-hmm.
of symptoms that people are getting collectively, across the planet, not just in the
yes.
U.S., all over the
and
world.
And all ages.
That's right.
I mean, one of them, when your heart opens, it feels sometimes like you're having a heart attack.
Yeah.
And
pressure in the chest.
Mm-hmm.
Or tightness in the chest. Short-term memory in 20-year-olds, and this isn't Alzheimer's.
Yes!
You know, it's because you're not supposed to remember your mechanicity. You're supposed to let that go.
Well, and as the dimensions are crumbling, you know, there's certain parts of our memory is connected to certain things that existed. And when you warp time and space and dimensions and frequencies, certain things will fall away. And so that's why people have whole chunks of their memory all of a sudden gone.
Gone. Uh-huh. Because you're not supposed to.
Because that event that happened in reality no longer exists. So how can it be held in your brain?
Plus, you're not supposed to bring it with you.
Right.
You know, all the pain and suffering you've had in your life, you certainly wouldn't want to take it into paradise with you, would
mm-hmm.
you? Mm-hmm. It'd be much nicer to leave it behind. So the things that were based in negative actions based on our out of whack egos. You know, as a human being in this reality, we certainly don't want to take that with us.
No.
So, because what happens is with our human mechanistic mind is we'll tend to recreate things just out of the comfort field that it's...
Yes, and out of habit and out of...
Habit, and it feels like home. It feels familiar.
Right.
You know, it's like when you go to a foreign country, it's funny, my groups don't do it, but you watch other groups, and you go to Peru, and... or Mexico or Honduras, and they find a restaurant that they know about that's in the U.S., they'll all flock to it, like McDonald's or Burger
uh-huh.
King or something crazy. And it's because it feels familiar. Even though you know you really don't want to eat there and you didn't like the food even when you were home, you go there because it's a familiar thing.
See, I'm the opposite way. I love going to foreign countries because it takes me totally out of who I am and what I'm used to.
Exactly.
And it opens up the space for a new way of looking at things and new creation.
And that's one of the great benefits to traveling in extremely foreign countries,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, Peru and Mexico. Because it is foreign, and you can't count on anything. Nothing's familiar, even the language, the food, the customs, the way you get around, nothing's familiar.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is new, and you can't act out of your mechanicities in those countries because there's no place to put it.
Right.
So it busts you out of those And one of the reasons why sacred travel works so well to help you break free from your old patterns is because you get a chance to do it for a while.
Right.
While you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Then the trick is coming home and not recreating your stuff again.
Right, coming home with the good stuff that you learned and not
exactly
falling back into old habits.
Exactly.
So speaking of trips,
mm-hmm.
you and I have a trip in common coming up soon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Aluna and I are going to Egypt together to be part of the first ever Egyptian WESEX ceremony or celebration. And I've had both Kevin Kaur and Christine Kaur, his wife, on shows before talking about why he's creating this event and what it's to be. And it's going to be a worldwide, you know, international event. There's going to be speakers from all over and entertainers from all different parts of the world. And Aluna and I are both honored to be included in as presenters. And it's going to be in April, 19, 20, and 21 of April, a WESAC full moon. And it's going to be on the Nile. The whole event's going to take place floating in a, they call them barges. That's the Egyptian term. But they're like little mini cruise ships. They're not barges at all. They're very nice. And we're going to be presenting this three-day event while we're floating down the Nile. I mean, I just can't wait. What do you think? What are your thoughts about it?
I don't know.
You don't know?
It's not my country. My countries are the Americas. But I'm really excited about going. Because a lot of things that I've remembered about my past lives and the ancient history go back to when after Atlantis fell, and a lot of people escaped to Egypt
and went to Egypt, yeah.
And that's where it all started.
Mm-hmm.
So and I have past life memories of being there. I just never had the call to go, and I knew eventually I would, and I didn't know how that was going to turn out. So I'm really excited about going. I'm purposely not going to study anything about Egypt. I want to go like what I call a sacred site virgin.
Yes, yes, it's perfect. Go raw.
It's something I suggest all my groups do when they say, should I read about Maya lands? I say no.
Mm-hmm.
Come as a virgin, because when you go to a place like that and you don't have a lot of expectations or ideas about what the place is going to feel like, then when you get there, what you get is the truth.
Right. Well, and if you don't have preconceived ideas, that's when the magic can happen.
Exactly, and that's when you can actually hear the sites, and that's one of the things I like doing,
mm-hmm.
is reading sacred sites.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to, if anything's anchored with any kind of an emotion, I can read it. So a temple site that emotion was expressed there, or even down to even simple pottery shards, they're real easy to read. You just hold them, and I can read the history of them,
mm-hmm.
and the person that made it, or... You know, artwork is real easy to read, you know, so you're around a lot of carving, stone carving, you can read that.
Yeah, you know, the first time I went to Egypt, which is the only time I've been to Egypt in this lifetime, was in January will be 18 years ago, and I had no intention of going to Egypt. You know, I really didn't have a desire to go. I really wanted to go to England and do the whole King Arthur trip. And I was hanging out with a spiritual group, and they all decided to go to Egypt. It was this World Peace Conference, and they were going to be a part of it. So I just went along just to go with my friends. I said, well, everyone's going to Egypt. Okay, I'll go with them. So I was totally unprepared, had no desires, no expectations, and I had never really read much about Egypt, and gosh, I mean, it was incredible. Each and every day at every site that we went to, I had spontaneous past life recall and all kinds of events happening, and I wasn't even trying. It just happened. It was amazing.
But that's why it happened, because you weren't trying.
Yeah, so
you
I can't wait to go back.
You can't try. And this is something people need to know when they go to sacred sites, is you got to quit trying.
Yes.
We go in. I tell them to go in like little children.
Mm-hmm.
Just have a good time and just let happen. Let the chips fall where they may,
right,
so to speak. Because that's when the magic will happen. And you just follow your heart. It's pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's really simple. It's just that we tend to think it needs to be all complicated to make it valid.
Right. We do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't need to be complicated. And so you went the perfect way.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why you got so much in such a short amount of time. Where someone who had studied Egyptology and studied all the sites, read all the history on them, would have a harder time because then they would walk in thinking they already knew what they were seeing.
Right.
Instead of going, wow, what is that? Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you shut down your curiosity with knowledge, it stops spirit from coming in and giving you the truth of what's really going on there.
Exactly, yeah.
So I'm purposely not going to read anything. And just enough so I know how to change money, what to eat.
you don't even have to study on how to change money. They do it at all the hotels.
Yeah. But, you know, just some little basics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what adapter do I need for my projector to plug into the electrical socket?
Oh, Kevin will have all that stuff.
That, you know, oh, good. So I don't have to do anything except show up with my laptop.
That's right. Show up.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, you know, those are it,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the rest, I'm going to let Spirit guide me to do what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very excited about it.
Yeah. So if people want to go and find out about this trip, there's actually a link to it. I put a link to it up on my BBS radio show page.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're on that, you can just click on for the Egyptian WESAC event. Or if you don't want to go to the page, the address is Spirit in Luxor, Luxor,
mm-hmm.
.com. Mm-hmm. So spiritinluxor.com, and you can register on there and read a little bit more about it. And
there's also a link on my website, alunajoy.com.
Yes, and mm-hmm. alunajoy.com, alunajoy.com. And you've got another trip coming up before Egypt, right? Aren't you going to Palenque?
Yeah, the month before we're going back to Palenque. And Palenque is a very special site in the Chiapas in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
One of the few sites that was never discovered by the Spanish. So the conquistadors did not alter the energy like they did on the coast in the Yucatan.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's one of the few sites that Christ walked when he walked the Americas. There's a book out, if you look it up in rare books, you'd find it. It's called He Walked the Americas. And it's all the stories of the Native American people talking from Alaska all the way to Argentina of a Christ being coming to their area that could speak their language and taught them about love and healing and things like this. Well, Palenque is one of those places that Christ walked to. And when I was one year in 1990, one night I decided I was going to sneak into that site and spend the night. And God downloaded after spending all night on Temple of the Sun in the dark, surrounded by howler monkeys that I thought were jaguars, by the way. It was the daylight out of me. I was still pretty much a Palenque virgin.
Uh-huh.
But the next morning I remembered that, and I remembered where I was sitting and where I was. I had a past life memory of being in Palenque when Christ was there, and I thought I was losing my mind because the two timelines didn't add up. Well, he should have been in the Middle East, and da-da-da.
Uh-huh.
Here I am in site in Mexico, and I'm having Christ visions. What does this mean? And then a couple years later, someone showed me this book of all the little Native American stories of Christ walking the Americas. So Palenque is one of those places, so it has a really sweet, pure heart energy. It feels like Garden of Eden to me. I don't know what else to call it. There's just really no language to describe how beautiful it is.
Hmm.
our guide, Enrique, has been with us for quite a few years, and he's definitely a heart man. We only go to heart sites and only work with heart people. So he's quite amazing and really gives a lot to our group.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we've invited an archaeologist for 2 days because he has unraveled the codes of the sacred geometry of Palenque. And instead of looking at the history of the Mayas, he is actually looking at the sacred geometry of the buildings and the way they're facing and how they're aligned up to Venus passages of the sun. And what he's doing is just incredible work. And it's kind of bridging archaeoastronomy with science and archaeology without all the history that I don't believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And he works with Alfonso Morales, who's one of the main head leaders of some of the digging going on in Palenque now. They discovered some new stuff and covered two more temples. Used to be mounds I used to meditate on. I knew there was cool stuff under there, too.
Uh-huh.
They've dug it all up, as archaeologists do. But because he's been hanging out with Alfonso and his father's Moisés Morales, and he's one of the few Maya people in the area that really understand the true history of the Maya people. So he's a real old friend of mine. And so he's kind of influenced Christopher Powell, who's the man that's going to be giving a morning a tour and an evening conference on the shapes of sacred space of Palenque. So that'll be a new twist on my trips, because usually we avoid archaeologists at all costs.
Right.
We try very hard to avoid them. But this guy I met a couple years back, and I'm really fascinated with his work because I think he's onto something. And he's sparked my interest.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought he'd be really a good addition to the first couple days of the trip, just so we can see Palenque with different eyes.
Right.
Without still knowing the history. Just looking at
the geometry.
Looking at the geometry of the architecture,
mm-hmm.
which is fabulous architecture.
Mm-hmm.
This incredible building there. Amazing building.
I've never been there, so forgive my ignorance, but is the architecture sort of pyramidical shape there?
Well, there's lots of pyramids, for
uh-huh.
sure. And then there's one temple called the Temple of Inscriptions that has a tomb deep down inside of it.
Uh-huh.
And with a little luck and some of Moisés Morales' magic, the director will give us permission to go in. Once in a while, we get in.
Mm-hmm.
I got a feeling this year will work. But can't put that on the schedule until you know.
Right.
And you won't know until you get there. But this tomb is the tomb of a man that archaeologists have named Pakal Bhutan. And when I go down and into the tomb and sit with him, his body's gone, but his spirit's still anchored in the temple. Just like in Egypt, they anchored their souls in the temple for
right.
the energy. They did that in the Maya lands too. And he was a peacekeeper, and he taught about a form of peace that we still don't understand with our consciousness, because it's not peace for them wasn't a lack of war.
Right.
It was peace didn't have a
more paradise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he understood that, and he's one of the living masters, and it's really amazing to be able to go down and sit with him, but you can also feel it outside.
Mm-hmm.
When you sit, maybe 20, 30 feet from the front steps, there's a certain area where you can really feel it. You kind of have to dial up the sight by using your body as a kind of a compass
mm-hmm.
to find out where the spots are that are going to talk to you. Palenque also is in the book Keys of Enoch. You know
yes.
about that book?
Yes.
It's considered the head of the dove.
Oh, very cool.
It's the head of the dove, and what that means to me, and it's what I understand it to be, is that Palenque is also one of the places for the Hall of Records, the living library.
Mm-hmm.
And I know exactly where it's hidden,
mm-hmm.
and I'm certainly not going to tell Christopher Powell that, because he'll dig it up, because
mm-hmm.
I think it's supposed to stay in the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, it's one of the few places they haven't dug. So they dug in all the temple foundations and found all kinds of cool stuff. It's all visible in the museum, still carries quite a bit of energy.
Mm-hmm.
But the Hall of Records hasn't been touched. It's still there. And I won't even say on the radio, you're just going to have to come and I'll point it out to you.
Right. Well, it's the same with Egypt. You know, mm-hmm. they constantly dig everything, but where the real secrets are, they haven't gotten
mm-hmm.
to either. And I know where it is.
Oh, good. You'll have to point it out to me.
I will.
Don't see it here, though.
No.
We need to protect those places.
Yeah, yeah.
So we do a lot of meditating in this one area that we're sitting right on top of the Hall of Records.
Uh-huh.
And it's activated by December 21st, which is the day that is the most popular date for the recycling and the rebooting of the Mayan calendar.
Well, yes, that's the winter solstice.
Uh-huh.
Usually.
It's linked to that. So December 21st, 2012,
mm-hmm.
I'm throwing a big party in Palenque.
You were throwing what?
A big party.
Oh, good.
Yeah. It's not going to be a pilgrimage anymore. It's going to be a big party.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to celebrate in Palenque because that site is linked to the Hall of Records and the way the sun shines at equinox. Or, I mean, at solstice.
Mm-hmm.
Late in the afternoon.
Hmm.
A neat little beam of light.
So Palenque is the place to be on December 21st, 2012.
It's the place I'm going to be. You know, I'm assuming that other people are going to find other places that are going to call to them.
Right.
But Palenque's it for me.
Uh-huh.
But I'm rather much of a kind of a Palenque junkie.
Right. And that trip is in March of 2012.
My next one's in March, yeah.
Next March, so
mm-hmm.
6 months from now.
Mm-hmm.
So people that are interested in going, go to Aluna Joy's website, alunajoy.com, and can read all about the trip and sign up. And sign up for her free newsletter. She's got a great newsletter. It always has a lot of information in it. And you can find a link to that on the website. Aluna Joy is also part of the One Spirit website and that newsletter. So go to onespirit.com, sign up for that newsletter. And it's not O-N-E. Spirit, it's the digit one spirit. So, gosh, we've got 8 minutes left, and I want to talk about your essences that you make, because I know some of the stories of some of them. They're so exciting. A lot of people make essences these days, vibrational frequency essences. I make one, but Aluna makes lots of them, and I kind of learned how to make essences from Aluna Joy, whether she's aware of that or not.
Mm-hmm.
And yours are unique because they're not so much a flower or a herb, but they're a place. They're an energy.
Yeah, we make sacred sites sacred site essences. They're made in the sacred site when spirit calls me to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And after all these years, we've only, 21 right now,
mm-hmm.
Sacred site essences. And last trip in Peru, I made one, and I'm still trying to see if it's holding its energy before I release it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a heart ceremony site essence.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is I just go prepared. I have a little bowl and the things I need to make an essence with. I make sure I've got them with me at all times. And then spirit will say, okay, make an essence. And then I just follow instructions. Where to put it, when to put it, what to put in it, where to get the water. Sometimes there's stones from the temple. Sometimes there's flowers. Sometimes there's leaves from trees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. Everyone's different. And each one's made on some interesting alignment. Like we made one here in Boynton Canyon on the 5-5. Remember when all the planets were lined up?
Yes.
Several years back when we made one in
mm-hmm.
Boynton Canyon in a site that is usually trafficked by a lot of tourists. And I figured there's no way I'm going to be able to make an essence in there because if anybody walks by the bowl with the water in it, it'll make an essence for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Saturday morning, too. And nobody walked through that canyon while I was making that essence for two whole hours. And each essence has a story like that. There's really brief little stories on the site. If you call me and you want to know more about each essence,
I remember the story because you were still here in Mount Shasta when it happened. Or living here.
Mm-hmm.
You were in England and you were on a bus, part of your tour, and you were heading along down the road, and all of a sudden you guys witnessed a crop circle being made. And
it was a 33-petaled crop.
Yes, and you just jumped out, ran in there, made your essence while the thing was being made. I mean, that's...
Well, it was the first one. I hadn't made one.
Oh, that was your very first
essence?
Yeah,
and Spirit said, make an essence. I'm like, well, I don't know how to make an essence.
Oh.
And I said to my partner that was next to me, and I go, Spirit just said to make an essence, and I don't know how to. And a lady, several petals in this crop circle, heard me talking, and she goes, I know how to make an essence. Here's what you do. And I happened to have everything I needed right there.
Including the liquor?
No, the liquor I had to get later. The vodka that you preserve it, I got later. But I made the essence right there.
Uh-huh.
And it was in one of those on yellow rapeseed fields, and it was just golden yellow up to your throat. And you know who else was in that crop circle that day?
Mm-mm.
Amora Quinion.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Another Shasta sister.
And yeah, we just happened to be at the same crop circle at the same time.
Huh.
Yeah. It was the first. And I thought, well, I don't know what to do with this now. And I had never set out, just like you didn't set out to go to Egypt, I didn't set out to be an essence maker.
Right.
And all of a sudden I'm doing it, and then the buddies say, but yeah, you have 8 planets in water in your astrology chart. Who better than you? And I go, oh, yeah.
You have 8 planets in water?
I have 8 planets in water.
Wow.
And I'm still alive to talk about it. And then the I Am Blessing waters, those are entirely different. They're not made in sacred sites. They're made with the I Am Presence came to me one day and gave me this whole deal about the I Am Blessing waters in about 20 minutes flat.
Mm-hmm.
Never changed it an iota since I got that first message. But there's 17 essences and 7 archangels. And they're made with the I Am Presence. They had to be released on Thanksgiving Day. And they use the words I Am. I Am love and compassion. I Am. You've got to use the words I Am.
Right.
The motto talks about you put love in water or peace in water, and it changes the molecular structure of the
mm-hmm.
water. That works. It changes the water. But when you take that water in and you drink it, it doesn't change you because you've got a resistance to that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make it personal.
Yeah.
And this is what they told me.
You have to claim it.
You have to claim it. So you have to say, I am.
Yeah.
And I am are the most powerful words we can use.
Yeah.
So we put I am and in front of the waters, and all those were made in my sacred circle, in my medicine circle in my yard here in Sedona.
Mm-hmm.
And all at once, and on a specific day, and the whole story is, by the way, is on iamblessingwater.com, or there's a link on alunajoy.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there are 17 essences, and all 7 archangels, Archangel Michael being my favorite because he's one of my
buddies. Oh, yes, I know. We all love Archangel Michael.
Yeah.
He's my buddy, too.
But we have, like, I am creativity, inspiration, and vision. I am grateful and thankful. That's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I am truth and wisdom. I am enlightenment. You even got some more wild ones, like I am multidimensional. I am clear communion with angels.
Don't drive your car while taking that essence.
Yeah. You don't want to take the crop circle sacred site essence either and drive a car. That one's really spinny. Yeah, these aren't for healing. These are for activating.
Yes.
Where most essences are there to help you heal, although some of them do heal, like the Mount Shasta lily is a very healing essence.
Mm-hmm.
And the opal is a very healing essence. Really helps you get over your issues easier. But most of them are to activate and push you to the next level. So they're not, what Archangel Michael says, they're not for sissies.
Right.
His words exactly, not mine.
Mm-hmm.
He says they're not for sissies. By the way, we put a special code in our shopping cart for anybody listening. And if they place an order in the next few days, they'll get 33% off any of our essences.
Oh, great. Well, we've got a minute left, a minute and 20 seconds. So tell people what the code is.
Code is LIGHT, LIGHT. So in the shopping cart, you push in the code, and it'll automatically calculate your 33% off.
Great.
So all sacred site essences and all the I Am Blessing Water essences. For anybody listening out there, you're going to get a discount.
Great. Okay.
Because we really think they're important and they need to be out there.
Great. Okay, we got 50 seconds. So let me thank you so much for being on the show. This is probably the fastest show in perception for me that I've ever done. I've been doing a year and a half of these shows now. And it's just been great, and it's always great to connect with you. And
we'll see you in Egypt.
And everyone, go to alunajoy.com and find out more about her, and look at her darling, shiny, beautiful face. She's just a precious little angel. And thank you for listening. We'll be back next. I'll be back next week, same time, same station. Have no idea what I'll talk about then, or if I'll have a guest or not. But tune in and find out. And violet blessings to you all. And don't forget to do your violet flame meditation. You can download the invocation on my website, ascensionstgermain.com, or on the BBS radio page. There's a link to it. Thanks. Bye-bye.